So we'll start in just a minute, but for those of you interested, two books that I can recommend that are what we call love poems to God or from God, so we call poems of the mystics. This one is called, where I gave you the two poems, called For Lovers of God Everywhere, For Lovers of God Everywhere, by Roger Houston. He's put together the poems of Christian mystics, and what I like about it isn't just the poem on one side, but an explanation or background, either how the poem was written or the background of the person who's written the poem. Okay. Second one is called Love Poems from God. Love Poems from God. And these are sacred voices from both the East and the West. And it's put together by Daniel Ladinsky. Daniel Ladinsky. L-A-D-I-N-S-K-Y. Love Poems from God. So those are two following this topic and what Mirabai said. Houston. Spelled like House, H-O-U-S, and then D-E-N.
So Father Jim has some books and CDs, I think, and items over here that you can purchase. So don't forget about that. And then there's a whole book of table of books over there, full of wonderful books. Please take them. Otherwise, they have to be stored somewhere. So they're yours. And it's there's a feast of really good books over there. We have another announcement. A dear friend of ours, one of Word and Life, Helen Dean, is very, very sick with pneumonia. And you know how serious that is because she's well into her 90s. So let's be saying prayers for Helen Dean. I want to personally thank Ginny and Judith. You're the ones of action. You're the action in this group. I just really appreciate what you put out, the work you go to put it out, and we come in here and it's all beautifully laid out. And really grateful. Thank you. Thank you to the Pink Group for the good food today. And now let's hear from Father Jim.
So, since I'm the caboose for this book, I thought rather than doing an exercise that you might have some questions, not just about anything I've said, but throughout the whole many chapters that we've unpacked, or anything that Mirabai said, or that stirred up within you that you'd like to discuss, or for me to respond. And if not, I do have some prompts for you in small, intimate gatherings. So, any questions or comments, come up to the microphone.
I just wanted to make a comment about that exercise that you had us doing before.
Mm-hmm.
I shared about turning my radio on and hearing a cello sonata.
Oh.
I think it was Bach, and how lost I got in the music. But I have a friend who plays musical instrument, and he said, you know, when you play, it's even deeper.
Yeah.
And if you can compose, mm-hmm. even more so.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to share that, and I think you can kind of use that as a comparative experience about how much deeper I could have gone if I had learned to play the cello when I was young and was a good cellist now. Just,
absolutely.
So I just wanted to share that.
No, thank you. Again, it's about going deep into reality, go deep in the experience. So we have a phrase that we use in ministry. It's called theological reflection. What that means in plain English is that when you've had an experience, don't just say, oh, that was lovely, or that was nice, or that was painful. Sit with it. What is the meaning of this? What is God saying to it? How do you unpack that? So that's a beautiful way of what you've just done. You've unpacked the mystery at a deeper level from the perspective of a musician. So we're all musicians one way or another. We're all artists in different ways. We're mystics in different ways. But at some areas of our life, God is inviting you to go deeper. Deeper so this wonderful mystery you've described, Jen, will become real for you. Beverly.
I love the way you use the parts of our lives, you know, getting our acts together and the foundation, and then what, unraveling? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Could you talk about, I'm unraveling, so could you talk a little bit more about that?
Certainly, yes. Okay, we'll use another metaphor that's common for many of us. Happy spring. And you know, in our tradition, we have a thing called spring cleaning. So that is a conscious unraveling of the household, where you turn the house upside down. And generations ago, literally, we would do that. Nowadays, we'll focus on a closet or two, or maybe a drawer. We recognize, yeah, we should do something different. But this came from cultures that spent typically many months buried beneath snow. So it was a way of literally airing out the surroundings, especially the home environment, and making that become real. So when our lives unravel, when our lives become like swamplands or horribly messy, think about spring cleaning. Or if you want to share this with your children, grandchildren, is another metaphor I just heard the other day. Think about it as gaming. They're now learning that young people who play video games are becoming skilled in other areas of their life. So, for example, this one woman just wrote an article about it, that she had a very serious illness. And during her recovery period, she was doing a lot of these video gaming online. And she noticed that the more that she followed the discipline of what's involved there, that she got better. So here's something we can all do. Here's an example. And one of my colleagues at the ACC, should we say, has a real struggle to make his office neat. So he read the same article, and what he did was, he said, I walked in and said, what are you doing? And he told me the story. And one of the things is, he just gives 5 minutes, 5 minutes a day. So I got 5 minutes. And he works in his library, cleans it up. And he does that with different things. So here's an example. Spring cleaning, or the messiness of life, the unraveling, just focus on one thing today. The reason being is underneath is a deep truth. It reminds you that you are more powerful than you think you are. You have more energy than you think you do. It puts you back in the driver's seat. Because when life is unraveling, we often feel like victims, like life is happening to us rather than collaborators, that we're working with the divine presence. So that would be the wisdom I'd offer you. Thank you for the question. Gloria.
I think you were speaking right to me, right? I just got back from babysitting my daughter, dogs, three dogs and a cat.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Talk about house cleaning.
Yeah.
Okay. What I want to know is, will the Archdiocese do to bring more transformative experiences to or okay them, such as centering prayer, which is hard to find unless you really focus? It's not like this is a good thing for, you know, it's not affirmed, I don't think. Maybe it is. And Tezay.
Yeah.
And Lectio Divina. Mm-hmm. Those are ancient modes. And I think that my thing is, I love those, and I think a lot of young kids, children, would too. So, but I don't get that we get that approval from the Archdiocese. What can you do?
Well, let me. What can I do? I can't speak for the whole Archdiocese, but you need to talk. Have a question for the Archbishop. But what I will say is this: you're absolutely right. Those are all very traditional ways of praying and necessary ways of praying in this difficult time of unraveling, not just individually but collectively. Now here's the rub. Very often in the Catholic Church, we tend to relegate that to either someone or a department. So what we've done in the Archdiocese is pretty much say, well, that's the retreat houses in the diocese, even though more and more are closing. Or that's for people like Father Jim Clark, who gives retreats all the time. You know, go talk to him. Or that's for spiritual directors. Okay? That's often what happens. Exactly. In the parish level, very often the priests themselves would say, I'm too busy to do that. Okay? Now, it's ironic because the U.S. bishops wrote a wonderful document. I forget which year it was. It was in the 90s. It was called Where Our Heart's Not Burning. And in it they have a very wonderful pivotal phrase, is that all religious education is meant to flow from adult religious education, not the other way around. That we start with the kids and go upwards. It should be the other way around. Which is sad, because most of you in parish experience, you know, that's not been your experience. You know, we adults get the leftovers. We're lucky if there's an annual parish retreat, for example, or a day of recollection. Or maybe the lectors and Eucharistic ministers will get some attention. But to have it happen from the ambo, that's another question. I remember one Sunday I decided to preach about prayer, because that was the gospel passage, Christ at prayer. And I said, you know, you've heard us priests talk about prayer often. Let's do it together. And I just taught them prayer of the imagination. And you know, this one usher, who was a very polite way to say it, is a very distracted man, meaning he'd come and out, in and out, all during Mass, never really was participating. He never forgot that. He said, Father, we're going to do that again. I said, well, you're supposed to do it in your life. Don't wait for me to lead you. But I think that's it, is that I wouldn't say a lot of priests or clergy persons feel a bit reticent to do it. It's the time and the energy. You know, it's the time and the energy. But having said that, you can call the Office of Religious Ed and talk to one of the two people who oversee adult religious education. The good news is that I'm the director of New Evangelization. Our office and Office of Religious Ed are in the serious talking stages of how we can begin to link these two, the type of conversation that we've been having with catechesis, so it becomes more experiential. In fact, we have a meeting beginning of April about that. Exactly, yeah. Yeah. Sure. Okay, Jackie.
Well, we've been through this through three or four rectors in our church.
Oh, wow.
Getting that particular bundle of spiritual practices together, mm-hmm. which also includes healing touch.
Absolutely,
and
yes.
What we got was, oh, that's a nice idea. Oh, but not yet. Oh, maybe. Nobody ever directly said no.
Oh.
One, two, three, we went through. And finally, nobody had said no.
Yeah.
So finally we just started it.
Excellent.
We just plain did it.
Wonderful.
And
that's great. Excellent.
And nobody ever kicked
us out. That's great. I'm glad to hear that.
They didn't exactly embrace us, but nobody said, stop it.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yep.
So we're still doing it.
I'm glad to hear that. Thanks, Jackie. So let me speak very openly and honestly. As you heard in the introduction, I've been at the House of Prayer for Priests now almost 25 years, hearing confession of priests, spiritual direction. And I worked 14 years in seminary, so heard it up and down the ladder. Please let go of your projections, and us clergy persons, we struggle with prayer like you, perhaps even more than you. And I think that's one of the reasons why so many of the rectors and pastors and leaders of our communities are reticent to teach prayer, because they might feel a bit hypocritical. You know, who am I to teach you lecture beginning when I don't do it, type thing. It's one of those things where I think we need to invite all of us into it. So I don't mean any disrespect, but it might be a wonderful gift to your pastor, to your religious leader, to just ask them every once in a while, how are you doing in your prayer life? I'm serious. We ask you how your marriage is going, your family's going. For especially for us Catholic clergy, that's meant to be what gives us life and meaning. So to ask us that, nothing else, you probably get this reaction to begin with, but then just smile and say, no, I'm really concerned that you're doing well. You see? And unfortunately, a lot of us religious leaders don't have spiritual directors, which to me is an abomination, but that's my opinion. So for you to do that is a way of calling us to task. It's a loving request. Don't wag your finger, though. That's not good. Any other questions? There you go. There you go.
This this is apropos to how you began, you know, Christ who did not think being equal to God was a thing to be clung to,
yeah.
but emptied himself, becoming yeah. human. I have, the group knows this, two great granddaughters. They're now 8 months old. And they're going through a transition I've never seen in books. And it's a transition between having enormous strength and energy, yet they cannot crawl. It is no longer safe to even diaper them on a sofa because they can manage to get to the edge of the yeah. thing. So I have had to go to the floor with them. And I'd say that after just 2 days on the floor, I have more flexibility
wow.
any exercise I've been given.
Wow.
And not only that, the flexibility seems attractive, or the floor seems attractive. So I just offer that. A little child shall lead you.
That's beautiful, Dawn. That's great. That's excellent. It's also possible that the wonderful gift of your great-grandchildren in the sense of their embodiment is tapping also into your inner child, and it's releasing in a powerful... That's beautiful, Cher. I love that. That's great. Jim, go ahead.
I wanted to tell you a story. It was probably 10 or 12 years ago now. We were still up at on the Mesa at Holy Cross, and a woman said, if you're in the presence of music, you're in the presence of God.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about that because I've been telling people for years that my creativity is what nourishes my soul.
Absolutely.
I'm a blacksmith and a woodworker and a locksmith and a quilter and I make
yeah.
lace. And my mission in life is to make beautiful things.
Great.
I've made over 50 quilts and given them all away except for 6 or 7.
Yeah.
But I thought about that comment that she made. And I went home and I thought about it. And I thought, no. When you're in the presence of creativity, you're in the presence of God as a co-creator of the universe.
Amen.
And so I make a lot of stuff, and I usually give it away. That's something to think about, you know, whether it's dance or art
yep.
or blacksmithing or woodworking or knitting or crochet, whatever.
Yep.
When you're in the presence of creativity, yeah. particularly if you're the one who's doing it.
Yes.
I didn't realize until I heard that statement, I made the connection why my creativity
yeah.
nourished my soul, because
yeah. that's right.
It was communicating with God.
So you're listening to your muse in a way that creates these projects, these items. It's lovely. That's lovely. So one thing I'd comment on that.
Don't forget, when you sing, you pray twice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Probably could say the same thing about dance and poetry and all the other things. But to recognize that in the second half of life, that as you respond to the creativity, as Jim is talking about, it's going to be different than the first half of life. That just because you do something doesn't mean you have to do it for a reason other than just the creative experience. It's about liberating, validating, expressing. So I want to leave you with this comment. I got this from a therapist friend of mine. It was very helpful. That impression without expression leads to depression. Yes. Impression without expression leads to depression. So as we grow older, if we have not found the ways and the means of expressing what's inside us, don't be surprised if your spirit begins to feel depressed. What Dawn just shared with us is an example of that. Something is coming alive in her so that literally her body is feeling more relaxed, greater ease of movement, is that we are all connected. Remember, just like God, there's a unitive reality about our humanity. Body is connected to soul, soul is connected to spirit. And so to truly listen to that, how are you being called to listen to your own muse to create? What will that look like as a co-creator? Renee.
Yeah, I, in answer to that, well, in response to that, there's so much suicide now and drug use and stuff. when my son was in high school, he started saying, I don't think I believe in God anymore. I said, okay, is there a place inside of you where no amount of sex, beer pong, and yeah. rock and roll can fill up? He said, yeah. I said, that's God. And I think that that's what's happening, is that, you know, we don't have the 50s, you know, where we used to go to Bible school or, you know, camp and stuff. And it's just really sad that there's this big hole inside of our children and our grandchildren that's not being filled up. One example that I had was, my children came to me, and when they're about 8 or 9, and said, oh, our cousin told us there's no Santa. And I said, oh, okay. I think Santa will be really happy to know that he doesn't have to ever come to your house ever again. Well, they had to decide whether to listen to their cousin or do without. So it was a wonderful extension of their belief system. The other thing was, I was moved to tears in sharing that. I was up at the Grand Tetons, and of course you see the Grand Tetons for hundreds of miles, you know, around. But I got up at like 4 a.m. and went out to watch the sun come up, and I was filming, you know, and taking these pictures, and I was just real happy. And then I finally put my camera down after about an hour, and I just stood there and I just experienced the Grand Tetons. And of course I just started weeping, and I'm crying away, and I'm holding on to the fins, and I'm crying, and something comes up and puts its head on my hand. And it was this horse. He could feel. How, and so I like was scared, and then I petted him, and then he went away. So I just put my head down and kept on crying. And this other horse came up and tried to comfort me. So it's just like when you're one, you know, when you're one with, you know,
absolutely.
The universe. So
yeah.
Thank you
for sharing that. Well said. Those of you who do have pets, you know that to be true, is that they connect with the energy. And very often you'd connect with the energy with your own pets. So, do you have something you want to say right away, Jim?
Yeah, that's the book we studied last time.
Okay. That's right. Exactly. Yep. Connect with. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Amen. So, in light of what, excuse me, Renee was sharing, to recognize that when someone comes to you, knowing you're a person of faith, and says, you know, I no longer believe in God, you can just smile and say, oh, okay, tell me about the God you don't believe in. And they will tell you. And very often, you can honestly say, you know, I don't believe in that God either. And it starts a wonderful conversation. So don't give them the religious God. Give them the God of love. And the God of love is one who listens without judgment and helps them to tap in the way Renee was explaining it. In other words, the pain of what's going on inside of them. Because very often this is the ultimate reaction to reality. I don't believe in God. You know, projecting all your problems onto God. But when you can step back and a contemplative stance says, oh, okay, that's very interesting. Well, tell me about the God you don't believe in. That's the way Jesus welcomed people who believed or thought differently. Do we have time for one more question or comment? You've been fingered.
Well, first of all, I really, really appreciate you coming and speaking to us. You wrap it up so beautifully. I told Judy, you make my heart sing. You know?
Thank you.
And I was going to go to Congress today without coming, and my husband accommodated me in his schedule. But I was wondering how, okay, if I understood you correctly, spiritual maturity and psychological maturity
yes.
are linked.
Yes, very much so.
Are we witnessing in the great division we are going through?
Yes.
a discrepancy mm-hmm. in maturity.
Yes.
And if that is the case, as beautiful as Mirabai's book was, I couldn't help thinking, well, these same beautiful three religions, Abrahamic religions, share in the responsibility of failing to help humanity grow spiritually mm-hmm. by willfully using fear, mm-hmm. which is the greatest impediment to growth.
Yeah.
And therefore, our current longing for spiritual prayer is our longing for growth. And I think exactly like you said, if religion isn't ready for it, we just need to go ahead and do it.
Yep.
That's basically the conclusion I came to, and it was Thomas Keating, mm-hmm. one of the great, how would I say, spiritual leaders of our modern time, who woke me up to this. And I walked away from the Mind Supermind presentation feeling like I had finally found Dorothy's, and it never left me. It has sustained me since I heard him speak. So anyway, I encourage everybody, just go ahead. And there are prayer groups everywhere.
Yeah.
You don't have to wait exactly. for the church to approve of it.
That's
they are
right.
everywhere.
Yeah. So. Thank you.
Voila.
Yeah, voila. Christiane is referring to Thomas Keating was part of the renovation in the whole contemplative tradition in summarizing the monastic perspective of the contemplative life and developing what is called now today centering prayer, focusing on the one in order to experience the many. But we typically, as North Americans in our culture, we do it in reverse, and that's why we have such a hard time encountering the one love, because we get so distracted by the many. And why, as we heard Teresa of Avila saying it beautifully, is that that's meant to draw us to the one, but very often we get distracted. So I'd like to go back to that comment. Everyone has a psychology. A psychology is how you understand or receive your own humanity, your personhood, your beingness, how you describe it, how you live it. That's your psychology. Okay? Your spirituality is how you understand, experience mystery with a capital M. Call it God, call it whatever you want, but it's there. How do you deal with the unknown, the unseen, the unacknowledged, the parts of you that perhaps don't make sense? Do you see that presence as other? Is it benign? Is it malignant? Okay? So we call that presence God, or love, or ultimate mystery. So when you pull the two together, you recognize there's a wholeness that we're each called to. So the prayer forms and the practices that you choose either help you move to greater wholeness, greater cohesiveness, or greater unitive life experience, or you'll move to greater fragmentation, dissonance, and separation, which leads to destruction and violence. Now, we are experiencing, as I said, a time of history where we're seeing both. And why, rather than becoming discouraged, we are to encourage by word and example to draw others into just look at this one flower. Yes, the whole mountain is beautiful. Just look at the one flower. Look at this one bee, this one person. Or put your spiritual practice in this one project. Don't let your energy be sucked out by giving yourself to 15 projects. Especially as we age and mature as human beings, it's meant to be less, not more. You know why? Because in the lessness, the less many, that's not good English, but the less many, you then are able to focus your energy on the one. That's most important. So it's meant to be less possessions, less worries, less anxieties. All of these just keep pushing. That's not me. That's not me. That doesn't belong to me. That's not me. That's not me. This is enough. So let me leave you the final story. It's called The Stream. The story about this wonderful beginning of a river is that it began to snow on the top of this mountain, and the snow began to drop, and it reached several feet. When the spring came, the snow melted, and a slow stream began from the top of this mountain. And as it made its way down the mountain, it gained more and more power, more and more water from other little rivulets. By the time it got to the base of the mountain, it was a raging river. And it took off across the valley. And it was so happy. It was singing. Because the river got broader. There was nothing to keep it in check. It got broader and began to flatten out a bit. Then it came to the edge of this terrain that the river had never seen before. And so it threw itself against the terrain, and yet the more it threw itself against the terrain, the more it got absorbed by the terrain. It was called a desert. And so this went on for several days, and the river was getting more and more frustrated and called out to the Creator, "What is this that stands between me and moving forward?" And the Creator says, "It's called a desert. I created it." Why? To teach you a very important lesson. What's the lesson? Oh, you'll learn it in a few minutes, I hope. Well, how do I get across? Let go. What do you mean, let go? Surrender. Just relax. You and I can work on this. Watch and see what happens. So eventually the river says, "Okay, it's your turn." The river relaxed, became more placid. And then this cloud came over. The water began to evaporate. The cloud got bigger and bigger and bigger. Soon was joined by another cloud, another cloud, another cloud. And the clouds carried all the water vapor across the desert and over to the other side. It began to rain furiously. And every single drop of water that was in that river now came down. And the river happily began to flow again on the other side. Faith is meant to be more than a religious assent. Religion at its best points us in the direction of the Creator in the depth of what it means to be human. But the great key the mystics teach us, and that Mirabai so beautifully has taken a whole book to unpack through the lens of different religions and different quotes, is a way of saying, surrender to the love that belongs to you, that's given to you by your being human. It has nothing to do with you. As you surrender to it, give yourself to it, you're able to overcome obstacles, you're able to move forward, you're able to discover more deeply, more broadly, more completely who you are and who this Creator is. God bless you.